Good morning and welcome to our chain session. I'm John Means from Van Horn, Texas. I'm the Regional 4 Vice President of the National Cattlemen's Beef Policy Association on the policy side. And it's my pleasure and honor to introduce our two speakers for this session. Colin Woodall. I got the wrong page here. Colin Woodall is a Senior Vice President of Government Affairs for the NCBA Washington office in D.C. He is here to tell us about the changes agriculture might expect from our new Congress. Colin is NCBA's chief lobbyist on Capitol Hill and leads the Washington office in developing strategies to ensure that the cattle industry's voice is heard by policymakers. Colin is originally from Big Spring, Texas, and holds a degree from Texas A&M in Agriculture Systems Management. Alisa Harrison is a Senior Vice President of Global Marketing and Issues Management. She directs NCBA's checkoff-funded national and state partnership strategies to activate customers to choose and build beef demand. Alisa comes to NCBA after serving as the Senior Vice President and Communications for Marketing for the International Franchise Association. Today, she is going to explain smart devices, or Alexis, Siri, and now Chuck. We are changing the way consumers purchase our beef products, and she is very much on the leading edge of this. Colin and Alisa, welcome to Cattle Raisers Convention. On behalf of everyone in this room, I would like to thank the both of you for all you do for our industry. Colin, as you make your way up here, I'd like to know how many times that you've been to the White House under this administration. And you'll be surprised at this answer. Thank y'all.
Thank you, John. To answer your question, I've actually lost count of the number of times I've been to the White House in this administration, but I'm over there almost weekly. Now, to put that in perspective, during the Obama administration, all 8 years, I was over there 3 times. So I think that tells you a little bit of the change that we have seen in Washington, D.C.
And it goes to show how well-respected this gentleman is in the White House and how effective he is for us in Washington. Thank you, Colin.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Elections have consequences. Let me introduce you to a consequence. For those of you who have spent the past 6 months in Bolivia, this is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, known to her fans around the world as AOC. AOC is the new face of the Democratic Party. She's the new face of the change in Washington. A year ago, she was a bartender. Today, she is a renowned expert on taxation, health care, food production, and greenhouse gases. But I have a lot of admiration for her because she was able to take the tools available to her, which are all the social media tools that are available out there today, and go from a bartender to probably one of the most influential members of Congress in Washington, D.C. right now. Every tweet, much like the president, every tweet people watch, every comment people listen to. If you go outside her office in Washington, D.C., the wall is covered with sticky notes by her admirers talking about how she is the salvation of the United States and what a great individual she is. She has a lot of support, and her support is growing. She is what we are dealing with in today's Washington. And there are more just like her, but at the same time, she's not the only story. And I think that's the good news that I want to bring to you, because even though she's the one that you see a lot about, you hear a lot about, she's not the only voice in the new Democratic Party, because a lot of the new Democrats were elected in districts across the country that had been held by Republicans for decades. And it's a lot of those that we have gone to deal with, to introduce ourselves with, to make sure that they understand what it is that we do on a daily basis. And as such, they have been able to step up and let us know that they want to work with us. And we're trying to take full advantage of that because we have a whole host of issues that we're dealing with. Now, what's interesting about AOC, what's interesting about her is that she is making Nancy Pelosi look moderate. Can you believe that? It is hard to believe, but it's the truth. And it's something that we have to understand as we engage with all sides of both the Democrat and Republican Party in Washington, D.C. And, of course, AOC's claim to fame right now is the Green New Deal. Now, when this came out, Nancy Pelosi, and this is her quote, said, "The Green Dream," or whatever they call it, nobody knows what it is, but they're for it, right? That was the speaker's comment. But it is a serious concern, because when you read it, it reads like a true liberal manifesto. It's not just about climate change. It's about jobs for all. It's about health care for all. And the thing that's more concerning than anything else is that there are no details. She just knows that greenhouse gases are bad, and she wants a net zero greenhouse gas emission. So in order to help her with that, everybody go home, take a deep breath, and don't ever let it out. She's not one that's going to be set aside by facts. She has her opinions, she has the support, and it's given her a platform to move forward with this Green New Deal. Now, we had a bit of an interesting show this past week, because even though AOC moved forward with the Green New Deal, the gentleman that's standing there on the right, that's Ed Markey, he's a senator from Massachusetts, he introduced the Green New Deal on the Senate side. And Leader McConnell came out and said, "Democrats, I'm going to give you a great opportunity. You're going to have the opportunity to vote on the Green New Deal." Now, as Senator John Cornyn so adeptly put it when he was speaking on the floor, any U.S. senator, when given an opportunity by the majority leader to have a vote on your resolution, would be jumping up and down with excitement. But when Chuck Schumer was told about the great news that he was going to get a vote on his party's prime deal, what'd he do? He stepped back and said, "Well, this has got to be some sort of sham. This is a sham vote by the Republicans, and we're really not interested." So they voted against their own Green New Deal because they thought it was a trick by the Republicans. Well, it was. The majority leader knew exactly what he was doing, and what he was doing was making sure that of the vast majority of the Democrats in the Senate who are running for president, he wanted to get them on record to be able to show where they stand because of the lack of details, because of the really egregious claims. He wanted to make sure that the public truly knew where everybody was at. And to the Senate Democrats' credit, I guess you can say, they didn't fall for it. And so that's why they made the decision to vote no, or in most cases, present. So that way they can tell their constituents, "We were there, but we were scammed by the Republicans, and we didn't fall for it." But it's been a great opportunity because the lack of facts, allow us to come in and fill the void. In Washington, D.C., if there is a void, somebody's going to fill it. 9 times out of 10, the people that fill it are not people that like what we do every day in the beef industry. This is one of the rare occasions where we get to fill our void and do it with the facts. It's all about cow farts. That's what the document that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's people put together referenced. They actually said that it was going to be really hard for them to eliminate cow farts, so maybe the Green New Deal was going to take a little bit longer than they anticipated. Well, you can see what Sam has to say here. It gives us an opportunity to talk about those true facts. And the facts are on our side, and they tell a compelling story, a great story. EPA has made it very clear. We are 2% of the greenhouse gas emissions in this country. 2%. Eliminating beef cattle is not going to change the game in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. Of all the land in the country right now, about 40% of it can't grow row crops. You can't grow organic carrots, but it grows grass. And it allows us the opportunity to take that grass and convert it into high-quality protein. And we've also been able to talk about all the great efficiencies we have had in our industry. We can produce the same amount of beef today as we did in 1977 with a third fewer cattle. These are great statistics. USDA's Agricultural Research Service just at the end of February came out with a report that said the U.S. beef industry is not a significant contributor to global climate change. So the facts stack up on our side. And we're able to go to Capitol Hill. We're able to go to some of these other Democrats and our Republican friends and talk about these facts, and it's helping us. We've been in the mainstream media. We're in trade media. We are the only industry talking about this in agriculture. Our friends in the row crop world, our friends in the pork industry, poultry, they're not talking about the Green New Deal, but we are. And so that's given us a tremendous opportunity to lead the pack, to be seen as the leaders in providing solutions, not contributing to the problem. And that's our message. Look at us as helpers in this discussion, not as the enemy in this discussion. And as that continues to take hold, and we can grow that among the members of Congress, and that's going to give us even more opportunities to try to wrap up AOC, Senator Markey, and this Green New Deal. Because the Green New Deal and the issue of climate change is not going away. And every time there's a hearing, we need to be sitting at that hearing testifying, telling the great story that we have. Great example of how it's not going away is this particular individual, Gunhild Storteland. It's not every day that you actually get a picture of a tree hugger hugging a tree. But that's exactly what Gunhild is. She's the founder of the EAT Foundation, which was part of the EAT Lancet report that came out earlier this year that once again talked about how bad beef is on the environment and on our bodies. Now, she is from Norway. She and her husband have a lot of money, and in true European style, it's do as I say, not as I do. Because Gunhild and her husband got married in Norway and then flew the entire wedding party to Monaco for the party. Well, wait a minute. What kind of carbon footprint did that have? It's not about them. It's about you, Mr. Dudley. It's about all those greenhouse gases coming out of the front end of your animal. Again, a great situation where being able to get the facts out there ahead of time helped us combat the Lancet report. And my colleague, Elisa, who you'll hear from in a minute, was a big part of that, where both the policy and the checkoff work by NCBA was able to get the facts ahead of time. And while the Europeans expected this to be a huge splash, a huge win for them here in the United States, especially with AOC and the Green New Deal, it fell flat. They held a briefing in Washington, D.C., and I think about 15 people showed up. So they did not get the catch. They did not get the hook that they were looking for. So even though this is going to be with us, even though this is going to continue to be a problem, we're ahead of it, and it shows that we can beat them. We can beat them. We just have to stay ahead of them. We have to get the facts out there, and we have to continue to pound on those facts. And if we can do that, we can always stay one step ahead of them. It's not just environmental issues and the Green New Deal that we're dealing with right now. We have quite a few others. Big issue for us, electronic logging devices and hours of service, something we've been talking about 2 years now. The good news is that livestock haulers are currently exempt from electronic logging devices. That's an effort that NCBA, along with you here at Cattle Raisers, have been working on, and we've been successful in maintaining that. In fact, during the government shutdown, that was one of the few policy issues that stayed alive. When a lot of other policy issues were uncertain in their future, our exemption from ELDs was solid. And we're going to continue to be able to push that forward. But it doesn't fix the problem. It doesn't fix the problem, and that's what we have to address now, because the problem is actually the hours of service. We don't have enough legal hours of service to get the animal from point A to point B in most places in this country without having to change drivers, unload, or do something else that is not economically viable. But the Department of Transportation, specifically the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, they don't care about economics. That's not their role. Their role is safety. And when you get off at their floor, the Department of Transportation, there are pictures of families, individuals, all people who have been killed in truck wrecks. So you know where they're coming from. The only thing that we have available to us to help us be successful here is the discussion of the animal's welfare. That has the attention of the Secretary of Transportation. That has the attention of Congress, and really is the only thing that we can hang our hat on right now. So we have a petition at DOT, asking for an extension of hours. It's not everything that we need, but it is an incremental step forward. And that's how we're going to have to work this with the current Congress that we have, incremental steps until we finally have enough hours to make sure that we're covering all the hauls out there. The safety record's on our side. We've been able to pull the data. The safety record's there, and we've also looked at the safety record of long hauls and heavier hauls in other countries, in Australia in particular, and that is bolstering our position, and hopefully will provide us the great opportunity to get the Trump DOT to approve this so that way we can go to the next step. We had to convince the Secretary of Transportation that a load of cattle is not the same as a load of toilet paper. And she didn't understand it at first until we explained to her that the last thing that she wanted was to be on the front page of the Washington Post with her policies responsible for a load of dead cattle. And then that got her attention. So that's why all of these efforts are for livestock only and not our other friends in agriculture. Because even though our other friends in agriculture also want to get their commodity to market, that load of corn can sit there. That load of cattle can't. So more to come on this, but we do have a lot coming up as far as maintaining our exemption and then hopefully getting our hours of service petition granted by the DOT. Let's turn to trade real quick. USMCA, NAFTA 2.0. Even though we were not a big fan of the president stepping up and renegotiating NAFTA, it was a campaign promise and something he wanted to move forward on. We told him that's fine, but don't impact our access to Canada and Mexico. We can't improve upon it. No tariff, no quota. It doesn't get any better than that when it comes to trade. That is the gold standard. No tariff, no quota. Free unfettered access. He preserved that for us. We can support USMCA. Now it's a matter of getting Congress to ratify it, and that's the next step. Now, that brings back our problem with some of our friends in the House. Because this was a campaign promise from Donald Trump, it is seen as a Donald Trump trade agreement. Nancy Pelosi is not all that interested in giving him a win. But several of those Democrats I talked about who seem to understand what we're doing to feed this country do. And we have been surprised at the number of Democrats on the House side, both new Democrats and current Democrats, several of them right here in Texas, who have been willing to step up and say, yes, it is a good deal. But we need them to put pressure on their speaker to bring it up for a vote so that way we can get this ratified. It's going to take a tremendous amount of work. Matter of fact, this is the top issue for us next week in Washington, D.C., during our legislative conference, where we're going to have producers from across the country in town, combing Capitol Hill, making sure that both the House and Senate understand that this is our top ask for the U.S. Congress to ratify NAFTA 2.0. South Korea is our success story. You've heard about it from several speakers already here at the Cattle Raisers Convention. This is also what we had hoped for in terms of negotiating trade agreements, and that is getting to zero tariffs. And that's what we're going to do with the South Korean agreement. We've got about 9 years left before we get there. It was a phase-in period that was built in, but it's coming. And it's already had a huge impact on our access. From 2012 to 2017, beef sales have increased 82%. South Korea is on fire for us right now. The president also said that he wanted to renegotiate the South Korean free trade agreement, CORUS. And he did so. He got it done without a whole lot of fanfare. It's been signed. The new one's moving forward and moving forward swimmingly and remains good for us and will continue to do so. China. There's a great analyst by the name of Brett Stewart. And he likes to say that China's our future, and it always will be. I think it shows what kind of interesting dynamic it is when we're dealing with China. The president has made China a focus of his trade policy, and when he was first elected, he wanted to restore beef access, and he did that. In 2017, he got us back in after almost 13 years of being out after BSE. But then he had a bigger issue at hand that he had to deal with. And by putting in tariffs, which resulted in retaliatory tariffs, that market has not been as beneficial for us as possible. But it has provided another great opportunity. Because when we got back in, we had a ban on beta agonists and a ban on our use of implanted hormones. That was part of the deal. The president did everything he could. He just couldn't get that done. This new round is talking about taking those non-tariff trade barriers away. There was a group in China this week, Secretary Mnuchin from the Treasury Department and Ambassador Lighthizer, the U.S. Trade Representative. Those two issues were on the table. Next week, a Chinese delegation comes to Washington, D.C. Ambassador Dowd, Chief Ag Negotiator, has said those two issues are still on the table. And if we can take the beta agonist ban and the hormone ban down, USMEF says that China can become a $4 billion market for us. And that is tremendous when you look at what we're doing right now. We'll get there in just a minute. The Chinese are getting desperate. African swine fever has hit them hard. The tariffs from the United States have hit them hard. And they are motivated. It's been a long time since we've gotten into the kind of details on a trade agreement with China that we're currently dealing with. So we're optimistic, extremely optimistic, that possibly by the time we get to the end of April, we could have a whole new day open to us in China. But it is China. And we are talking about a communist government. So even with our optimism that is in place, that optimism could be dashed pretty quickly by our communist friends. So stand by for more, but things are looking pretty good right now. We're excited about where we're headed. Trade value overall, 2018 surged by more than $1 billion, with South Korea being a significant part of it. Our top markets for 2018, Japan, a little over $2 billion, a post-BSE record. South Korea, value up 43% in 1 year. Tremendous value and value that's going to continue to grow and that will start to edge on and get a little bit closer to the Japanese experience. Mexico, a continued top market. Hong Kong, a lot of pass-through into China, which maintains their position. Canada, still strong, even though the value's down a little bit, still strong and rounded out number five. But the one that I added, just to make sure that you saw it, Taiwan. Taiwan has posted six consecutive record years for U.S. beef exports. And we sat down and we met with the diplomatic staff from Taiwan 2 weeks ago and had lunch with them because we just wanted to ask them about this. Said, hey, what's going on? What are you seeing on the ground that is resulting in this run-up given the size of their country and given all the other pressures out there? They told us that they are seeing record numbers of restaurants that are either seafood, French bistros, etc., that have walked away from their previous business model and turned into U.S. steakhouses. And that's what's helping drive this access into Taiwan. That's why we need to make sure we maintain our alliance with Taiwan. And even though it complicates the issues with China, we need to take care of them. I want to come back to Japan because we need to have a conversation about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP. See that red line? 38.5%. That's the tariff on our product going into Japan. Tariff, nothing more than a tax. And even with that 38.5%, they've still been our top market. But we have to look at the orange line. Red and green was a deal that the Australians cut before TPP was put in place. It started to give them a bit of an advantage. But TPP went into effect on December 30th this past year. We were a part of TPP at one point in time. The president pulled us out. The other 11 countries have moved forward, including our top two competitors into Japan, which are Australia and Canada. They've got a little over a 10% tariff advantage. Their product's just cheaper. And we're watching this very closely because they could start to erode our market share, and that concerns us. They're about to get another dip in their tariff on April 1st. So more to come on exactly what this impact is ultimately going to look like, but it does have us concerned. The good news is the president's also concerned. And even though he made the decision to pull us out of TPP, he's also made the decision to move forward with bilateral trade agreements, discussions with the Japanese. Those are going to kick off in earnest here in April. We do believe that we can ultimately get down to 9% like TPP was structured. But the question is, how long are we going to have to play catch-up? And can we play catch-up at an accelerated pace? That is the key critical component for us, is can we play catch-up in enough manner, quickly enough, in order to catch up with that orange line. That is yet to be seen, but that is going to be our goal moving forward. Measuring the value, the one that we always like to point out is value per head. USMEF telling us that in 2018 that was $323.14, a number that we want to make sure continues to go up. So trade is going to continue to be a big focus for us. There's another couple of opportunities available for us. One is in the United Kingdom. I know many of you have been watching what's going on with Brexit. I don't know what's going on with Brexit. Theresa May doesn't know what's going on with Brexit. Most Brits have no idea what's going on with Brexit. Regardless, we believe it's going to provide an opportunity for us to look at a bilateral trade agreement with the United Kingdom. Why is that important? It's important because in our history with the EU and the hormone ban, the United Kingdom has traditionally been a country that's been more willing to step up and listen to us and to understand the science behind production technologies. So we do believe that there's an opportunity here if we can cut a bilateral trade agreement, that we can do one that does not include a hormone ban or ban on any other production technologies. And even though the UK market may not necessarily be something like a Japan or a South Korea, as long as we can keep those non-tariff trade barriers out of it, it's successful for us. The EU continues to tell us that they want a trade agreement with the United States, but they don't want agriculture included. We told the president that's unacceptable, and he said, you don't have to tell me because I already know that's unacceptable. And so the president has said no, and he's not moving on that. Now, there's still a bit of an issue with our quota for high-quality beef going into the EU, NHTC. It's a memorandum of understanding, MOU, that was put in place about a decade ago that was meant to try to make amends for their hormone ban and the WTO ruling against them so many times. But they didn't craft it in a way that protected it just for us. And as such, Brazil, Australia, and other countries have been cutting into our deal. And we told our U.S. trade representative enough is enough. So we are working on a United States-only quota. And we hear that we are getting close on that. So we hope to have some good news soon on where that stands. Let's get out of trade and let's go back to the environment. Waters of the United States. My friends, we are near the end of this nightmare. And I look forward to talking to you in the future where I don't have to talk about waters of the United States. Because it seems like I've been doing it for about 15 years. But we're close. The comment period on the new WOTUS closes on April 15th, tax day. You have an assignment after you leave here today and you get back home. I need you to submit comments that supports our position on waters of the United States. It's easy. You go to our website, policy.ncba.org. Policy.ncba.org. The comments are already written for you. All you have to do is put in your name and your address and hit submit, and it will send the comments to EPA. If you want to write your own, you get that opportunity as well. But we need to overwhelm them with countryside support so that way they know that the activist community is not the only voice in this discussion. This new WOTUS does two things. It protects the water quality, but it, more importantly, it protects private property rights. And make sure that ditches and puddles are not regulated by EPA and the Corps of Engineers. So please send your comments so that way the EPA knows that they have a tremendous amount of support in the countryside on this effort. Let's talk about some of our other friends out there. In the middle of this particular map, you have the Humane Society of the United States, somebody that AOC also likes to work with. But it also shows some of their partnerships. If you happen to have a subscription to Consumer Reports, let it lapse. The Consumers Union, right here, the Consumers Union publishes Consumers Reports. And they go to Keep Antibiotics Working. They go to the Humane Society, Environmental Working Group, NRDC, and others that do not have our best interests in mind. But the group that I want to point out today is the Good Food Institute, run by Bruce Friedrich, who came from PETA via the Humane Society of the United States. The Good Food Institute likes this stuff, fake meat, lab-grown meat. Another one that NCBA has been talking about for a little over a year now since we took policy at our meeting in Phoenix, Arizona, to make sure that this product was regulated, because it wasn't. We went to FDA and said, what are you guys doing on this lab-grown product? And they said, we don't know. You should go ask USDA. And we went and asked USDA, and they said, well, we don't know. You should ask FDA. So it became quite clear that they did not know what was going on, and they were not engaged. This decision went all the way to the White House. The president got involved, and ultimately the decision was made to give jurisdiction to both of the agencies, which was a priority for us. So right now, because of a memorandum of understanding that was put out 2 weeks ago, the FDA has the jurisdiction to look at the overall safety of the process, to make sure that people can even eat this stuff. If they determine that this is ready for the market and it moves forward, then the Food Safety Inspection Service at USDA will be able to do the daily inspection on the fake meat product. But the big win for us is that USDA will be the agency that determines what the label on that product says. And that is a critical component of this discussion, because the Good Food Institute wants that label to say clean meat. And if FDA had their opportunity, they would approve that label. much like they have almond milk and other issues. USDA is not going to allow that to happen. And so a big win for us to put the jurisdiction of inspection in place and to make sure that USDA ultimately gets to approve that label. Now, what's next on this? What's next is we have to determine what's on that label. Fake meat sounds really good, right? It's had a tremendous amount of PR value for us. This is one where not only do you as producers get it, but the average consumer also gets it. And we're still in a situation where most consumers are going, ugh. And it's not just the lab product. It's still an issue with some of the plant-based products. If you've had an Impossible Burger, you will know why it's called the Impossible Burger. Because it is impossible to get the flavor out of your mouth once you have eaten that stuff. It's terrible. Absolutely terrible. And we have to continue to tell our story about beef as God intended it to be. So more to come on this. But now the challenge for us as an industry is to figure out, what are we going to call it? Because more than likely, FDA is going to approve it. It is coming to market. This is a free market society we live in. It's coming to market. We've got to figure out what we can put on it to make sure that the consumer understands exactly what it is they're getting. Fake meat is also a great opportunity for us to showcase the way that both sides of NCBA work together. We have the policy side, and we also have the Federation of State Beef Councils and all the work that NCBA does as a contractor to the beef checkoff. So to talk more about that, I'd like to introduce my colleague, Elisa Harrison, who is the Senior Vice President for Global Marketing and Issues Management. She's going to give a presentation, and afterwards we'll do a little Q&A. Elisa.
Yeah, great. Thanks. Thank you, Colin. Can everyone hear me? Good. So I think you saw what Colin was doing, the work that he and his team do to protect the business environment, the business climate for all of you in the room, as well as kind of make sure that we're operating on a level playing field when it comes to consumers. And so, as Colin said, NCBA is a contractor to the beef checkoff, and we work in kind of across a lot of the different areas. We do the consumer marketing and the Beef Is What's For Dinner campaign. We do issues management and media relations. We also conduct a lot of research, technical research in sustainability, nutrition, food safety, and product quality, which is critical to what we're doing in consumer marketing, as well as consumer research. And so I thought I would start off today a little bit about telling you what the consumer thinks of you, just very quickly. And I think to sum it up, consumers really like you. They love farmers and ranchers. This has been long-standing consumer research has told us. But what they don't know is they don't really understand what you do. And if you look at this slide, this kind of shows what consumers think about beef production and chicken production. As you can see, it's pretty level playing field. But look at the neutral. There's 44%, almost 50%, of them really don't know enough to even say if they understand what you're doing or know what you're doing. And in today's environment, more so than ever before, consumers want to know where their food comes from. They don't just want to know where their food comes from. They want to know where their shirts come from. They want to know where their shoes come from. And most particularly, they want to know how their beef is produced. And they want to know who's producing it. So what it tells us is that this is a tremendous opportunity because consumers like farmers and ranchers. And so we can play on that. Consumers also like your product. And some of the things that Colin was just saying, if, you know, beef really is at the top of the protein chain when it comes to taste. And when you ask consumers kind of what their perceptions are of beef versus chicken, it ranks pretty high up there. Have more positive attitudes about beef than they do negative. But if you look, they also have really positive attitudes about chicken. So when you look at all of these protein sources that are available today for consumers, because we've done a great job of explaining to consumers how important protein is in the diet, chicken is still our number one competitor out there when it comes to people choosing a protein product. And there's a lot of reasons for that. A lot of it is price. A lot of it's convenience. You can throw gravy on it, and it'll taste good. But we also know that consumers love the taste of beef. That is really the one thing that sets us apart from all of these other proteins. And that's what our research shows. When we ask people their reason for wanting to eat more beef, it's off the charts taste. We all know that. But you would be surprised. And also some of our research, they also like the taste of chicken and they like the taste of pork. Beef is still number one. But it's still something that we have to work hard in the consumer marketplace every day. When we ask them why they're eating less beef, four of the top five reasons have to do with health. That's still an issue for us, the perception that beef is not healthy. We've made a lot of headway. These numbers used to be off the chart many years ago, and with a lot of the investment that the Chekhov has made in nutrition research and the work that we're doing with nutritionists and doctors, and certainly the work that the state beef councils, including the Texas Beef Council, we're really starting to see a lot of that pay off. But it's still something that's in the mind that we're having to deal with from some of those early perceptions back in the 70s and early 80s. But this is the slide that I really want you to take home with you today. We're looking at all of these alternative proteins out there, especially fake meat, that cell-based meat that Colin was talking about. And it's extremely important that the work that we're doing in Washington to make sure that we have the same level playing field when it comes to regulatory oversight and what that label says. So that's critically important, and we've got such an early start on this, and we're in a very good position because, as you can see, when we ask consumers what they think is the best source of protein, that gives them the best protein elements, beef is number one. And, in fact, it even increased from 2017 to 2018. And eggs and poultry are right there. But if you come over here to the right side, this is the bottom end of the spectrum. More people think that cricket powder is more a better source of protein than lab meat or plant-based proteins. And you can see it really doesn't even measure. So while it's getting a tremendous amount of attention in the press, it's getting a tremendous amount of attention in the influencer community, some of the reports that Colin mentioned, we're still, consumers really just want to stick to the top proteins that they like and they know and that they enjoy. And as Colin said, that it tastes good. But if you look at where it is as far as sales, when it comes to meat alternatives, you can see it's a sliver. It barely even measures. On the left, it's going to be all animal protein sources, and on the right, it's comparing beef and those beef substitutes. So we're in a good spot to make sure that we're out there telling our story. We're certainly not taking our position for granted. We have to work every single day in the consumer marketplace to make sure that they are aware of all the great attributes of beef. And so when we look at, you probably saw a lot of this if you attended Randy Block's session, the beef industry from an economic standpoint and a supply standpoint is pretty good. That's going to lead to increase consumption as we look at 2019 and certainly going forward. So I think that's good news for us. But we still have to work every day in the marketplace for that consumer dollar. So we have a challenge when it comes to the beef checkoff. On one hand, the industry has been extremely efficient, producing more beef with fewer cattle, which is great across the board. Beef is better quality today. It's using fewer resources today. It's more sustainable today. But what that means is that there's fewer dollars in the checkoff program available because it's a dollar per head. And so our challenge today as checkoff contractors is to do far more working in that marketplace with all of the competition across all the protein sources than we ever have had to do before. So we took a step back about a year and a half ago and said, okay, let's get back to basics. How are we going to make sure that we're doing more things with fewer dollars and making a bigger impact? And so when we looked at the work that we're doing on behalf of the checkoff, you would say that it says funded by the beef checkoff. And so we worked with CBB to say funded by beef farmers and ranchers because we felt that that was actually something that was good for us. We tested this, and people really understood. They really liked the fact that you're paying into your own promotion program. That's a benefit for us. And so when we looked at what our overall strategy is going to be, what's the one thing that you guys want us to accomplish? And we think it's to be the top protein choice for consumers. I mean, why would we? We don't want to be two. We don't want to be number five. We want to be number one. And looked at what assets do we have that separates us from all the other protein choices, certainly the plant-based choices and certainly cell-based products that will be coming on the market, you know, as soon as this year. So we looked at kind of our three pillars: the people, the protein, and the pleasure. I told you that consumers really like farmers and ranchers, and people really want to know what you're doing and how you're producing that product. Well, we feel we've got a great story to tell. And so we're going to, for the first time, really push that out and really make that more of our marketing program. The pleasure, the taste aspect of beef. I mean, hands down, no one even comes close to us when it comes to the taste of our protein. And then, of course, the protein itself, the nutrients that you get, the strength that you get from the protein. That really is something, the kind of protein that you get from beef is different than what you get from other sources. So let's celebrate that and push that out there. And so when we looked at the other assets that we had, and it was our iconic brand, Beef Is What's for Dinner. It had kind of gone into the background a couple years. It's a 25-year-old brand. We've invested a lot of money into it, and we went out to ask consumers if it still had equity, that older millennial parent, the parent that is our consumer, to our audience, our target audience today. And yes, it still works. Those that remembered it had a very fond memory of it, of growing up in their mom's kitchen. Those who didn't remember it or never heard of it, it still resonated for them. So how do we make it relevant to today's consumer? So we actually relaunched, we rebranded it, new logo, put beef out there front and center. There's no question what this logo is talking about. And so we relaunched it about a year and a half ago with a variety of assets that I'll share with you. But this is just a reminder of who we're trying to reach, and it is that older millennial parent. Millennials are going to be, they're the largest segment of the demographic today. It's important. They're just now kind of starting to learn how to feed their families in a nutritious and affordable way. It's an important audience for us. But those consumer influencers are also a very critical audience for us. Dietitians, doctors, even bloggers today, chefs are becoming much more of an influencer than they ever have been. So we need to reach them and have a relationship with them so they can actually be an advocate for us on particular areas and particular issues on behalf of the consumer. So when I talked about beef as our number one protein, this slide isn't as relevant other than the takeaway that we know that when consumers are aware of beef is what's for dinner, they're going to make beef their number one protein. So that's why it's important for us to really push that Beef Is What's for Dinner brand out there across all of our programs, not just consumer marketing, but our consumer information, our industry information, and associate every one of those pillars with Beef Is What's for Dinner. So when we relaunched the brand, the first element that we launched was a brand new website. And that's significant because we actually brought together 8 different websites into one area. So food service, retail, dietitians, doctors, all would be going to one website instead of 8 different ones. And it's very interactive, and it really created a very robust back-of-the-house type of content for us, which is going to be critical for something else that we'll talk about in just a moment. And to date, we've had over 15 million visitors to that website. That's almost a 200% increase than from before we launched it. We're targeting that consumer with very targeted digital advertising messages that resonate with them and get them to this website to learn more about beef. This is also, it's not just about the cookery and the recipes that we have, which are fantastic, but it's also all of the information, very transparent about how we're producing beef. It answers the tough questions that consumers have about production methods, about some of the inputs and technologies that you're using. It's all out there. We know that we've got science on our side, we've got the technology success on its side, and we want the consumer to know that. We don't want to back away from that. So as I mentioned, that for the first time in our consumer marketing efforts, we're really putting the producer first, forward out there, all of you in this room, really showcasing what you're doing. So we set out with a challenge of trying to get the whole beef production system into a 90-second video that we could quickly and effectively show consumers what beef production is like today. So I'll play it for you now.
Old MacDonald had a farm. Well, technically, I guess. Old MacDonald has farms and ranches. And on that ranch, she has a cow. Well, 247 cows, but who's counting? Well, that guy is. And on that ranch, he gathers real-time data about his cattle with one of these. Yeah, can't really beat the view. And on that ranch, he helps preserve our native grasslands and wildlife with integrity, perseverance, and an app. Ranch tools sure have changed. And over here, they provide care for the animal with a balanced diet and just the right mix of carbohydrates, proteins, and minerals. Pretty sure that means yum. And, of course, with humane handling here, safety testing there, and quality control everywhere along the way. Yeah, these are the people and the places that keep Old MacDonald running like new, where commitment and innovation help make sure beef will always be what's for dinner, and maybe breakfast, lunch, and the occasional snack. Meet today's farmers and ranchers who bring beef from pasture to plate at beefitswhatsfordinner.com.
So we launched the brand relaunch with that video and driving people back to beefitswhatsfordinner.com. And it is it's the one page and the one area on the website that people are spending a significant amount of time on. They are interested in what you're doing. And then, of course, we've taken this, made smaller bites out of 30-second commercial advertisements, 6-second advertisements, and getting that out there on a lot of the social media platforms. All the advertising that we're doing today is digital. It's the most effective, most efficient way, and most affordable way for us to get out there and reach that target audience. Also, on our advertising, we're trying to take this kind of tongue-in-cheek, put a little swagger back into the Beef is What's for Dinner brand. So we came up with a creative wrapper called Nicely Done. And you can't see this. I'll show you a few specifics in a moment. But really just kind of a very positive, proactive, kind of funny twist to some of the messages that we want to get out. And you can kind of see, these are some of the ads that we've had out there. The first one, it says, "Nicely done, beef. You're paleo before it was cool. Nicely done, beef. You've proven that meat substitutes are just that, substitutes," which has performed very well. "And nicely done, beef. You build strong muscles, no protein shaker required." And so these are some display ads that we've been having out there over the last year and a half. We're constantly on Facebook and YouTube and Pinterest and everywhere that consumer is today. Whenever they're there, we're following them. We're there where they are and serving them up the information that they want to serve. We took this whole concept and put it into some very quick, short videos. I wanted to show one to you now.
Nicely done, beef. You know a protein-packed meal looks nothing like a shake. A protein like no other. Beef, it's what's for dinner.
So we had about a series of 6 ads kind of with that swagger, that kind of funny, that humorous, kind of taking shots as far as we can to some of our competitors and to some of the other food items out there. We are under USDA restrictions, so we can't go. We're somewhat restricted on what we can do, but they really allowed us to be a little creative in the way we went out and talked to consumers about that. We've also done some social experiments, and this is a video. All it is a steak frying in a cast iron skillet on a stove. And I don't know how many of you watch really cute kitten videos on the internet or cute puppy videos or the panda cam, waiting for the panda to have a baby, or the eagle cam, but people watch this stuff. And so we thought, well, I wonder if they'll watch just a steak cooking. And this is a 3-minute video. We won't have time to show the whole thing, but about halfway through, someone flips it, throws a little salt on it, and at the end it says, "Nicely done, beef. You just watched someone watch a steak cook for 3 minutes." And so it was a social experiment. We didn't put a lot of money behind it. We put it on YouTube. We put it out there. It promoted it a little bit, and hundreds of thousands of people have watched this video. And I'm not talking just the few minutes that we're looking at here. They watched the entire thing. And it also is important to really create content that is going to be engaging And this was one that really created a lot of chatter, a lot of engagement on our Facebook page and our some of our other social media. So this is actually a technique that we're actually creating some additional ads like this with some of the other cooking techniques about beef, because sometimes, folks, it's the simple stuff. You got to go with your strength. You've got to lead with what people want and give, you know, don't ever leave the people wanting what they want. So this was a fun thing. We just did it as a fluke. As we were doing some of the other commercials, we said, hey, wonder if, you know, we won't just film it and see what people do, and it was very successful. Kind of moving into some of the work that we're doing in nutrition and the strength area, have any of you watched the American Ninja Warrior? Yeah, we've got a couple. Are you aware of Lance Peekus? Lance is a competitor on American Ninja Warrior. It's a very physical obstacle course that you have to go through, and it's on NBC. Very popular, especially with kids. Lance is a rancher from Idaho, and he is a contestant on the American Ninja Warrior. And so we've been working with him to help us get that strength message out to consumers and moms out there. And so this will just introduce you a little bit to Lance. Hopefully.
They call me the Cowboy Ninja on American. Can I say American Ninja Warrior?
I just put in a pivot up the road, and he's up there swinging and dancing around on that. I go, oh, okay. This boy's serious.
For Ninja Warrior, you got to be really mentally focused, and it's important for me to make sure that I'm getting enough protein, and beef is just a great source of that.
What's for dinner?
Oh, it'll probably be beef.
They call me the cow.
Sorry. So we've been using Lance in a lot of the work that we do with influencers, putting him in front of nutritionists and physical trainers and a lot of the health community out there, because he can not only he's a living proof of what beef can do from a strength standpoint, but he also gets that people message out. People can learn a little bit about beef production and what it takes to raise beef in this country. So I want to spend just a few seconds, a little bit, kind of follow up what Colin said on, while we've got these great consumer-facing assets, the advertising and stuff like that, we still have people out there talking or raising issues of concern about beef production. And so while you might see a lot of it, we know that we have a good story to tell, and that's what we spend a tremendous amount of time on. For instance, we know, as I said, you are our biggest asset, and that when we get reporters, influencers, other folks out there to a ranch to actually see what you do, it changes the world for them. And so not everyone can get out to a farm or a ranch, so we actually put together virtual reality. Using virtual reality technology, you can actually, through the goggles, you can go and you can experience what it's like to be on a farm, what it's like to experience to be on a feedlot, both in the western part and the middle part of the country. And so this is actually something that was very, very successful for us. And it was we worked with the MEF at the World Meat Congress last year, and we showed it to all of the buyers that were coming around from the country. And even though they were in English, they still enjoyed it. So through some funding of the Iowa Beef Council, we've translated these videos into Spanish, Japanese, and I believe South Korean and Korean. And so now MEF is out there taking your story in market as we're trying to distinguish U.S. beef from some of these other competitors that we're competing with in the marketplace. We're also investing a tremendous amount of money into research, sustainability research, safety research, as I said. We're taking that information and getting it out in a very proactive way. It's very important as we combat reports like the Eat Lancet report that Colin mentioned. We're actually getting our content into some more environmentally focused publications that we've never been before. We're pushing our stuff there. And then, of course, when we looked at it, Colin talked about the Eat Lancet report, worked very closely with our policy staff and got that information out and briefed reporters prior to that report coming out. And you can just see some of the headlines that we were able to impact. And I think it did have was a result of that report maybe not taking off the way that they had hoped it would take off. The research that we're doing is great, it's fantastic, but we have to take that research and transfer it to the consumer. And so this is an example of the Mediterranean research that we did in the Mediterranean diet, show that beef really fits into this popular diet that is trending today. So we're working with a chef and an influencer, working with him, got him on Fox and Friends Saturday morning and did 3 segments of cooking and got a lot of brand information out there. But more importantly, got influencers and experts out there talking about the nutritional benefit of beef in a healthful diet on that. So we operate and focus on the long-range plan, which tells us, the industry-wide long-range plan that tells us to revolutionize that meat shopping experience. Very competitive today in the retail space. And so we were looking at how can we, again, do something big and bold and distinguish beef from the other protein sources. When you look at the number of people who are using some of the voice technology, either on their smartphones or Google Home or the Echo by Amazon, how many people have a smartphone in your house or you use it? So it's a good number of you guys here, but when you look at that millennial audience, it's up to 50 million people are using that today. And when you consider the growth of the use of smartphones, it took 15 years for 50 million users to have a television in their home. It took smartphones 2 years, and it's not going to stop. So we needed to have something to present all that great information that we have on our website to that consumer. And some of you might have seen this yesterday, but I wanted to introduce Chuck to you.
Meet Chuck Knows Beef. He's the artificial intelligence that knows all things beef. And he's been busy at ChuckKnowsBeef.com, giving folks much-needed confidence in what's for dinner. Beef, that is. He's also made himself right at home on Home Assistance.
Hey, Google, activate Chuck Knows Beef.
I'm Chuck, your all-knowing beef expert, powered by Google Artificial Intelligence.
He's made some influential friends.
All right, guys, my friends over at the Beef Council sent me a fun little box.
I'm here with Chuck Knows Beef.
Open Chuck Knows Beef.
Open Chuck Knows Beef.
So far, Chuck Knows Beef has been pretty popular. And he's just getting started. Because with artificial intelligence, every question asked makes him smarter.
Chuck, do you have any vegetarian recipes?
All of our beef dishes are made with 100% vegetarian cows.
Maybe a little too smart. Let's make 2019 the year of Chuck.
So we launched Chuck officially March the 1st. We are aggressively working with retailers. We're aggressively working with the news media. We just had some nutritionists and bloggers in the office last week and introduced them to Chuck, trying to get them to talk about it. So this is an opportunity for not only the NCBA and what we're doing at the national level, but all of the state beef councils are also taking this and rolling this out. And what I need you all to do is to really get in there and utilize beef, introduce yourself to Chuck, utilize him, because the more he's used, the more questions he's asked, the smarter he gets. So here's how you can access Chuck. You can go to beefiswhatsfordinner.com. He's right there, and you can interact with him. You'll see it right on that homepage. You can go to chuckknowsbeef.com on your smartphone. It'll come up, and it will text you. You can text back and forth with Chuck, ask him anything. If he doesn't know the answer, then we've got people back at the office watching every question that's asked. And if we don't have the information, then we make sure that that information is available. The other, if you do have an Alexa at home or Google Home, download the Chuck Knows Beef skill, and then you can start interacting with him via voice and talk to him that way. So we're very excited about this. We're going to premiere Chuck on a major national cooking show that will be coming later this year. Hopefully we can tell you more about that later, but we're still in the process of discussing that with them. So that is a very, very brief overview of what we're doing. I know we've got a few minutes left So we're happy to take any questions. Colin and I are happy to stay around and ask, answer any questions that you might have. And that's it. Thanks.
Any questions?
We do have a mic that we can...
Yes, sir.
Can you repeat that address for the WOTUS comments?
Policy.ncba.org. And all you have to do is put in your name and address, and it will send the comments for you.
Here we go.
Dr. McAdams.
Well, just use it anyway. Okay.
How are you?
I'm good.
Hi, Colin. Do y'all have a feel, and you might have said it, I came in a little bit late, are you getting more hits on kind of the virtual reality rancher goggles, or are you getting more hits with, you know, kind of the that weird altered reality of watching the steak cook for 3 minutes? Where's that going?
Yeah, that's a good question. The virtual reality videos are on our website and they're available, and those are actually something that you can physically take to a conference here. We could have goggles in the back of a room, whether it's an environmental conference or a nutrition conference. So that's really what that's for. But that the sizzle video that we're calling it, it was as much organic as it was us actually paying advertising space to do that. So a lot of engagement, people sharing it out, and just because of the uniqueness of it. So one is more of an educational tool. Another one is just to grab your attention and get you back to the website. Yes.
President Trump has threatened to shut down the Mexican border in the next few days if Mexico doesn't do something about immigrants coming up. What effect is that going to have on our relation with Mexico and the trade between the United States and Mexico, since won't be able to go either way for however long he does that?
It gets awfully complicated with the Trump-Mexican relationship. He has threatened that multiple times. We'll see what his follow-through is, but of course any closing of the border would have a tremendous impact on us, given the live cattle coming north, beef going south. Can't quantify that at this point in time, but more than likely he will tweet about something else quite quickly and turn his attention that way.
Oh, here we go.
Does Brexit have any implications for more U.S. beef sales to England, vice coming from the EU?
We believe that it does, yes. How much that is, we don't really have a figure to be able to quantify that yet. But the biggest thing that we think that we can get out of Brexit is a trade agreement with a European country that does not include some sort of ban on a production technology. So for us, the win in a U.S.-UK trade deal would be no ban on implant hormone use here in the United States. And as I had mentioned, when you look at our past with the EU, our friends in the UK have always been more willing to talk about production technologies than those on the continent. So that's why we think we have an opportunity. We have sent a team of ours over to London to talk to them, to talk to members of Parliament. So not only are we lobbying the U.S. Congress, we are currently lobbying the U.K. Parliament on this, trying to build relationships within the UK business industry, the producer industry as well, to make sure that we can have every opportunity possible to achieve that if we can get to that point. Yes, sir. The issue of rural broadband is a significant issue, and it is one that Secretary Perdue, Secretary of Agriculture, has taken on. He is trying to provide some incentives, provide some programs to try to expand that, because he knows it's an issue. NCBA does not have any specific policy on broadband access, but when asked, we have definitely said that it is an issue that has to be addressed. As far as the issue with the Postal Service, don't know how much I can do on that. But as far as broadband, we do believe that there is better times coming. Yes, sir.
I can't get over here quick enough.
Ooh, that's an interesting question. The question is, since we're not a part of TPP, but Canada is, and our relationship is so good, will products start going north and out of Vancouver ports rather than Long Beach or Seattle? I do not know the answer to that question. It is something that we have considered, we've talked about. I just don't know what the reality of that actually is. But you ask a great question, and it's one that I think we're just going to have to watch here and see what the experience ultimately provides us. But if that does happen, I believe that helps us continue to make the case to the president that he has to accelerate these Japanese talks.
My question is primarily for Alyssa, I suppose, although you may have some wisdom. The 4-H's, the FFAs, and the communities, we're seeing that diminish, and the interest that is there is very much around non-beef. Have y'all looked at maybe getting involved there at the high school levels, and that way as they go into the more liberal institutions for college and so forth, we've already got our foot in the door?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we've got a program called Masters of Beef Advocacy. It's called the MBA program, and where we go out and we train farmers and ranchers, and you know, including the youth, how to advocate and talk about beef and go out and talk to consumers. Now, the Checkoff also funds programs that the Farm Bureau executes that is really targeted towards those schools and those science teachers. And going into the schools with that information. In addition, a lot of the beef councils are also taking that information that Farm Bureau provides, as well as our information, and going and doing programs that that state 50 cents is paying for. So yes. Okay.
So you mentioned in your presentation that we've got a third less cattle than we had since the 70s, and you mentioned the tremendous need for funding a lot more places,
yeah.
And we're having to stretch our dollars to do more things. So are we adequately funded with the current beef checkoff system that we have going forward right. For the long term?
Right. Well, that's a difficult question for me to answer. We could always use more money, for sure. I think you've seen the state and national partnership get even stronger, so we can, you know, use that 50 cents more. A lot of states have passed their own checkoffs, like you guys here. In order for new money to increase that would take an act of Congress. So I'm going to punt this one over to Colin and get him to answer that.
Yeah, it always comes back to Congress. And if we are going to try to increase the national checkoff, then Congress would have to approve that. And for those of you who maybe did not see this week, Elizabeth Warren came out with her proposals for agriculture, how she views agriculture, and the checkoff is one that's in her target. She is not interested in being helpful. She is interested in trying to tear it down. So we've a checkoff increase in Congress is not going to be attainable anytime soon. Oh, yeah.
Since it's more of a policy issue, I'll let Colin do that. But Meatless Mondays have been something that's been promoted, you know, for a while. We just haven't had someone as high profile as the mayor take that on. And so that was significant just because it was him. But we've responded most directly to that from our policy side since it is a government action.
And we've had a lot of fun battling Bill de Blasio. And we've done it through his chosen media, which is social media. So we have some great posters that call him the Meatless Mayor. And we've been able to go, much like with the Green New Deal, talk about the facts, talk about the nutritional value. But the key that makes this one a lot of fun is that Mayor de Blasio also believes he could be one of the 50,000 Democrats running for president. And you don't achieve that without first going through Iowa. And so a lot of our media was focused on how do you explain Meatless Mondays to the constituents of Iowa since you think you want to be president. And that got some pickup within some of the national media. So that's been fun to throw rocks at Mayor de Blasio. Oh, why did you have to ask that? So the question is, giving everything we're seeing, who comes out front and center as we go towards 2020 in the election? Given that every day there seems to be somebody else jumping in on the Democratic side right now, I think we're at 18. We will be 20 plus. What's interesting is most of you probably don't know that there's already somebody who has been in the race and has already gone out. That's how interesting this is on the Democratic side. I don't know where this is going to end up. And I think the dark horse that everybody's waiting on is Joe Biden. And if Joe Biden jumps in, while he may not necessarily rocket to the top, he is going to shake that discussion up. But right now, they've got a pretty good mix as far as their support, whether it's Warren, whether it's Tulsi Gabbard, whether it's Cory Booker. But from our perspective, as you look at every single one of them, they are not going to be friendly to the cattle industry. As I look at every single one of them, I kind of sit there and think, we may have a situation where we pine for the Obama days. And that worries me. You know, much like I mentioned earlier, we've got Nancy Pelosi, who's more of a moderate now than she's ever been. So the challenge is there. And if I don't know what's going to happen. The Mueller report, of course, came out. The president claimed victory. Everybody's going to scrub that. I do believe that took a little bit of the wind out of their sails. They'll find something else in that report, probably. But the thing that we have to keep in mind is even if they do let that alone, they'll find something else. And I just don't know what ultimately that looks at by the time, looks like by the time we get to 2020. So that's why we have spent a lot of time talking about these new Democrats. All we have to do is look at voting records to understand that conservative members, Republicans, are more favorable to our industry. That is not a partisan comment. That is a comment based upon experience. You know, we always get painted as trying to be just the Republican group. No, we base that off of the experience we have seen and the votes taken by these members. But we do have quite a few friends on the Democratic side. We look at people like Henry Cuellar, for example, Phil Vela, are two here in Texas that have on multiple occasions stood up to help us as an industry. And as I mentioned, a lot of these new Democrats were elected in districts that had been held by Republicans for quite some time, and they're still seen as toss-up districts. So they don't have the opportunity to run to the left. They have to figure out how they work that middle. And those are people that we can work with. And those are people that we can get to a point that understand that facts are better than the Green New Deal and to understand what trade means to this industry. And so that's why we are currently operating in the friend-making business up on Capitol Hill. Any other questions?
Yeah. Got one more.
One more. Yes, sir.
Right.
What can we do from the checkoff side of that when we start influencing
Right. No, I think that that's an excellent question, and that's a question that we ask a lot about. It's interesting that GMOs have gotten such a bad rap over the years, but yet this cell meat that people are actually open to trying beef that was grown in a petri dish in a lab. So it's it is changing a little bit in that acceptance. So I think continuing to push out the way beef is produced in this country. You know, there's been some areas where we haven't been as open to talking about it. And I think when you compare pasture raised versus, you know, petri dish raised, I think people will come to that conclusion. But it's going to continue to be a challenge, and that's why we have to be on the platforms where young folks are, where the millennials are, where next gen is. You know, today it's Snapchat and, you know, Instagram, but who knows what platforms are going to be out there tomorrow. So we have to use our dollars to make sure we are where they are. And that's why we developed Chuck, because it's mostly the younger consumer that is asking their phone a question instead of just typing it. So we just have to stay abreast of it. But it's going to continue to be a challenge, with the dollars that we have, but I think we can make the best use of the dollars that we do have to try to keep up with that. We just have to be innovative and do some wow stuff like that, you know, the steak cooking. Sometimes, as I said, it's just that simple thing. So we have to be smart about those dollars, spend fewer dollars that have a bigger impact.
Thank you all for joining us, and lunch is ready in the trade show.
Thank you. Thank you.